Welcome to the Woman Podcast. This is Raj, your host and founder. We have a very special guest. Hopefully, I'll get this right. I'll probably get it wrong, but I know the first is Jessica.
Yes.
And is it Disiaska or?
It's Dishaka.
Dishaka. Okay.
Yes.
Okay, fantastic. And how are you today?
I'm great. How are you?
Fantastic. Not too bad. Thank you. So you sent me some information. You're an author. You've been doing this for quite a long time, since what, the age of 16?
Yes, I've been writing since the age of 16, and I recently just got picked up by Austrian House Press to be traditionally published.
Wow, that's incredible. So in total till now, how long have you been writing for?
So I wrote a little bit in high school when I was younger, and then I took the writing portion of my life took a back seat. I decided that was basically a pipe dream, you know, and not a lot of people get their books published by traditionally, you know, functioning houses and whatnot. And at that time, self-publishing was just starting and I was young. So I attended college and went to school and I got quite a few degrees. So I focused on my career for a while. Then when I became a mother, I took off and really focused on that. And then that's when kind of my passion for writing sparked again in 2019 is when I started writing. And since then, I haven't stopped. So I've written three series since then, two of which are now being published through Austrian House Press. I realized very quickly, even with my other degrees, I have degrees in business, communications, English, fine arts, and education. And usually art is my first love. But even with that, writing fulfilled me in a way that I never expected. I've never experienced through any other form or craft. So I knew that was definitely something that I was called to do. So in 2019, I started writing more, I guess, ferociously. I really haven't stopped. I think by 2020, I wrote two series at that point, one of which is now released, Awakening the Dark Throne. Which is a 5-book series. And I started trying to get myself published. I was, you know, pushing query letters out. I was contacting anybody I could. And then I started kind of researching what the industry is looking for, especially from a debut author. So I reformatted my book in order to fit those criterias. One of which, I always get this question, is why is the first book of a fantasy series sometimes so short? And that's because, especially if you are not a well-known author, they want you to kind of stick in that 90,000 word count. So my first one is about 84,000 word count. So I reformatted everything, edited it down, and started pushing it out, and still just received no luck. So I took a little bit of a break and focused on my career. I went back to school and got my master's degree in educational leadership. And then this past October, I just kind of felt a hole in myself. And I was like, I didn't know really where I was going. I wasn't fulfilled with what I was doing career-wise completely. I refocused back on my book, started pushing it out again, got a million rejection letters from the queries from agents and whatnot. And then I decided to self-publish in November. So I hired a digital artist to do the cover. I professionally got edited. And then come January, I think it was January 3rd, I got an email from an agent that was tied to Austrian House Press wanting to meet with me. And then a week later, after lawyers looked over the paperwork, I was signed.
Wow.
Yes.
That's an incredible journey that is. Is this a full-time gig? Your writing, is that full-time now? Or?
I'm still working. I mean, I would love it. Right. Again, it just got released April 2nd. So my kind of goal is within 3 years. I have Awakening the Dark Throne, which like I said, was a 5-book series that released April 2nd. And then I also have another one coming out here at the end of May. It's called Witches of Triora. And that's a 3-book series. Wow. So I will have a total of 8 books within the next 3 years going out. And I plan to kind of refocus on my first series I ever wrote, which is called The Bourne series. And that's more sci-fi fantasy, and kind of get that ready to go as well, to have that into my arsenal. But yeah, my goal is for 3 years from now, I want to be able to focus on this fully. So, I mean, I've started, you know, creating swag, book swag. That's very popular in our niche. So t-shirts, you know, tumblers, like, you know, here's one where it has our logo on it, just things of that nature to get that rolling. Definitely, I put together a street team to help me push out my content and get it across a larger and wider net of viewers and book lovers. And yeah, I'm working full time, you know, 4 full time jobs at the same time. But you got to hustle a little bit until you make it.
Yeah, absolutely. You're absolutely right. Yeah, definitely. You definitely have to do that until you don't get where you want to get to. So Awakening of the, like you said, Awakening the Dark Throne. So this is the first book.
Yes, this is the first out of five.
Okay. I mean, without giving too much away, I mean, what is if you describe in small detail, what is it about?
Sure. So the book, first and foremost, is dark fantasy. It does have a romance element to it. But first and foremost, creating the book, I wanted to emphasize that I did do a lot of research into Norse mythology. I love when I'm reading a book that I can pick out little bits of history or things that have happened or occurred in real life. So I went through and I did a lot of research on Norse mythology. And for example, in the book, I call elves Elfar. And that is because the Norse gods and whatnot, when the Vikings were telling these stories where the elves are originating from, the first name that they actually named them were the Alfar. And they're created by the Norse gods, Fegra. And so I incorporated all that into my book. So that's very historically accurate. I took it from a darker standpoint because it's kind of just like Disney fantasy, Disney stories where, like, you know, Cinderella, they make it into this beautiful, you know, fairy tale story. But in reality, it's a very morbid story where, you know, her sisters are cutting off the ends of her heels to try to fit their foot into the shoe and whatnot. So that's kind of what we've done with elves at that point. They weren't ever created to be this beautiful, majestic creature or fairies. Fairies are vicious little things. So I took it from the realization standpoint of what they were created for. So the premise of the story is that our main female character, Genevieve, known by Jen, is a half-breed. She's half elf and half human, so half Alfar, half human. And she's raised by her human mother until she dies, and she is orphaned. She's taken in by the Catholic Church, basically as an orphanage, and finds her, you know, found family of a bunch of, you know, random orphans. And so she kind of takes the mother role in that. And when her, you know, beloved favorite sister is stolen by the Dark Court, she then basically ventures over the border into unsafe land to find her sister and get her back. And so there's a lot of elements here. I put she's a half breed, and by Alfar law, as soon as a half breed of any kind of any species is conceived, they're supposed to be removed. You're not supposed to be able to live. So she's already, you know, walking a dangerous line, but. So she knows about the Light Court and the Dark Court. The Light Court's supposed to be the kinder of the two. The Dark Court's the vicious, evil ones. And so her sister, Lily, is taken by the Dark Court as a slave. And she's heard horrible rumors about what they do to humans. They experiment on them. They rape them. They, you know, eat them. They sell them. They use them as workers, whatever it is. So she sells herself as a slave to the Light Court in order to get across the border into the Fey lands. And during that time, she's is bombarded by a bunch of species, the things that she's heard about in nightmares from the humans. And she finally ends up at the Light Court, where lo and behold, she tries to stay under the radar, but she gets chosen to be the next king in line's concubine. And his name is Galen. And so she's trying to combat basically how to get to the Dark Court and, you know, but still keep her identity safe. So in the midst of it, Galen falls in love with her, and she begins to develop feelings for him. But she quickly sees just how the Alfar treat humans, and it's you know, very contested and very disappointing in her eyes, especially because the Light Court was supposed to be the better of the two. And so, like I said, during this time, she's, you know, fighting her feelings for him. He's obviously fallen in love with her, but he can't give her truly what she wants. She meets her best friend Levos which is Galen's cousin. And so far the audience has loved that character, definitely. He kind of takes her by the hand and teaches her about the Fey world and how it all works. And so, she's trying to find a way to get to Lily, like I said. And during this time, she also learns that the Fey realm has been at war with rifts and portals that have been opening up all around their lands, letting in creatures that they've never seen before. And the creatures that I've incorporated into this are mythological creatures from every culture, every decade, every century. So you're going to see things from Asia, you're going to see things from Greek mythology, your Roman mythology. You're going to see, you know, not the Kraken, but, you know, of that, those type of lores. I incorporate a lot of different religions and different mythology into this. And so she's kind of learning about the way that the politics work and whatnot. And she finally is able to meet members of the Dark Court when they come over to help the Light Court with basically a pest problem that they've been having because the roofs have been opening up around the area. So she meets their ambassador, Arendrel Lyklor, and he is teasing her. He is there, you know, basically telling her that Lillian has taken a lover and all these things, and basically makes her outraged. And during this time, as soon as she crosses the Fey border as well, she begins to develop powers. And the interesting thing about this is that when Levos tells her about how the Light Court and the Dark Court formed, the Light Court was the original of the two. And so the Light Court was created, like I said, by Fegra, the Norse god. And when she bestowed elves immortality, she basically did so because they took care of the earth. They love the earth, and they are very much tied to the elements. So they're able to create, they're able to control fire, water, earth, and wind of that nature. So they were very kind and lawfully good creatures. And basically what happened, I incorporated Christianity into this at this point, but when Lucifer fell from heaven and his demons fell to the earthly planes, some of the demons fell on their land and basically went through and ravaged their land and started destroying and ripping everything apart. And at this time, the Light Court was not warriors. They were farmers and they were cultivists and things of that nature. They were poets. They were very peaceful creatures. And so after decades of combating Lucifer's demons and whatnot, they eventually created their own military, but they were still no match for these demons. And at that point, a group of generals from the Light, Alfar, made a deal with another god called Azir. And this is a fire god, and he's not good, I would say. So they made a deal with him, and he said that I would give you a power that would be able to completely destroy permanently a celestial being, if in return, basically, you worship me and you do these things such as human sacrifice, virgin sacrifice, things of that nature. And so in doing so, they created a break in the Light Alfar and the Dark Alfar that at that point was formed. And through the Dark Alfar, they have different powers. They are no longer attached to the earth or anything of that nature. So they have powers of, telekinesis. There's paralytic shock. There's pheromone manipulation. There's one that can control nightmares. There's healers now. There's all these different things that are coming about from the Dark Court power. So the Dark Court is a very small group of people, whereas the Light Court are larger. So that's kind of where that balance of play comes into hand. Because if you do look at it, I would say that the Dark Court has a lot more deadly powers than the Light Court. But during this time, like I said, Jen starts realizing that the powers that she's having is as of a seer. And she's like, okay, well, Light Court doesn't have this power. They only have that of the elementals. So she kind of starts questioning herself. And so she does begin to start having visions when she's sleeping and things of that nature. And it's taking a toll on her. A battle breaks out that the Light Court and Dark Court work together to fix because creatures are coming in from the rifts at that point. And she works, with the ambassador of the Dark Court in order to destroy the threat. So once that is solved and she starts figuring out, okay, I'm obviously possibly coming from the Dark Court. I think that might be where my father is. The Dark Court does leave and she's stuck again with Galen as he prepares to marry the princess, Yela, and to get married. And that's breaking her heart because, they do have a relationship and she has developed feelings for him. And the Light Court king then begins to go mad. And during this time, he becomes very violent, very aggressive. There are some trigger warnings in this book, so I would definitely preface that. But yeah, she does get basically abused during this time, and it kind of breaks her down. So you're going to watch Genevieve go through a lot of different stages of basically grief and how she's handling trauma of a lot of different sorts. And towards the end of the book, she at that point, doesn't really care if she lives or dies. And, she's still trying to focus to get to Lily, but she's been through so much at that point. She just wants her revenge. And so she goes through, she uses her powers, a vision is gifted to her, and she uses her power basically to take her revenge. And at that point, at the end of the book, towards the end of the book, it kind of is revealed of to who she is. There's a lot of different things that are tied together, but there's a lot of different loose ends I left open that are going to be explained more in books 2 through 5. And so, yeah, so she kind of goes through, she enacts her revenge. She's ready to die for it. It was worth her risk of life. And then I kind of throw a wrench at the end of the book that some people saw coming, a lot of people didn't. But yeah, you get to meet, like I said, a lot of different characters, a lot of different creatures. There's a form of a dragon in there if you're into that type of thing. And you kind of get to see the fairies like enact a red eagle, if you guys know what that is, if you follow Viking-like lore and whatnot. So,
wow.
Yeah. The long, elongated synopsis version.
No, that's fine. And you've explained that in nice detail. So how long did it take you to write your first book?
First book was only a week. So I'm a, yep,
wow.
I'm an obsessive writer. Stephen King is kind of like that, where he just, when he starts writing, he doesn't stop. But yeah, I'm an obsessive writer. So when I start writing a book, especially if I already have it, like I take a while to plot it out in my head. Like I'll like lay down and, you know, just plot it out in my head and play it out like a movie. But yeah, as soon as I have everything, all the pinpoints in place, I can't stop until it's all out of page. It's almost like the characters won't shut up until they're on paper. So, I blew that one up in a week.
And so this book was released when?
April 2nd.
April the 2nd. So it's available on, like you said, it's available from whereabouts, everywhere?
Everywhere. Yep. It's available everywhere. We're working on getting it in bookstores right now. I have a couple of signings already booked with Books A Million, Barnes & Noble, and a couple of my local bookstores here. So we're getting it into bookstores. But yeah, everywhere online it is available. It's available so far in paperback and the Kindle version ebook. And then we are working on getting it into an audiobook in May. We're going to start interviewing readers and whatnot once we have some feedback and we see the, you know, sales rising.
Wow, that is incredible. And it must be a nice feeling to get your first book out, because obviously, like they say, the first book is like for musicians, the first single is the most important one, isn't it? And for authors, it's the same thing. The first book is the one which, you know, this anticipation, you know, and stuff. So how were you feeling when the first book was going to come out? Were you worried or excited at the same time, or how was it?
Yeah, it's kind of a mixture of all feelings. You know, I mean, writing a book is almost like, you know, being an artist in general, mm-hmm. whether it be your music or a physical form of art like painting, because you're putting mm-hmm. something of yourself into that product. And you're putting it out there for people to judge at that point. And so like, there's just a lot of times where, like, you know, I've struggled, and I've talked to so many other authors about this, but, you know, you have reviews that coming through. So usually what my publishing house will do is they'll do a round of beta readers and they'll do a round of ARC readers as well. But yeah, you get people that love the book and are obsessed with it and want to talk about it and they want to support you. And then you get those people that, you know, the book's not for them, and that's okay. It's kind of like that 80-20 rule. And so it is a bunch of nerves. I'm excited to share it finally, because that's why I wrote it. You know, it wasn't to become a millionaire or anything like that. Like, I love talking about books, and from a young age, I'm a huge like Star Wars fan, and I'm kind of a geek. I love World of Warcraft. I love League of Legends, all of that. So I'm definitely into that realm of fantasy and sci-fi. And so being able to finally create something from my imagination to put that out there, you're putting yourself out there to be judged at that point. And so, you know, some of the negative comments I've had, or some of the things that I wish I could just sit down with that person and address, because a lot of the times the things that they're picking out as negatives thing, or they've had questions that they say the book hasn't answered, it actually has answered. They might've just missed it. You know, and like another thing that I'm running into a lot is, you know, because this book is fantasy, and it does deal with elves, it's gotten compared a lot to A Court of Thorns and Roses by Sarah J. Maas, which I absolutely love. She's an amazing writer. She's my favorite. I'm there with Anne Rice. She's definitely one of my favorites, but I'm getting a lot of comparison to that book just because of that element. And, you know, there's a love triangle and things of that nature. And I kind of just, I'm interested into like kind of picking through those people's brains, because my theme is a lot different. Like, there are similarities where, you know, there's like a protective border between the humans and the, you know, the Fae realm. But I definitely explain that in the book as basically, you know, my main character Genevieve is like, you know, it wasn't a protective border. It was a protective border so the other things wouldn't eat their cattle, it wouldn't eat their slave, you know, slave population and things of that nature. So yeah, I mean, and even, you know, in Sarah J. Maas, she never refers to them as elves. She refers to them as High Fae. And Fae is a generalized terminology of mythical creatures. So fairies fall into that, you know, nymphs, these things of that nature. So yeah, I wish sometimes I could just kind of go through and talk to those people, you know, but at the same time, you just gotta let it go. You know, your book's not gonna be for everybody, and that's okay. So overall, you know, I'm more nerve-wracked than anything, but I've had so much positive feedback from the people that have loved it. And that makes it worth it. And everybody's already ready for book two. And book two is my absolute favorite. I think once book two is released, it will really set my book apart from any other fantasy series out there, because there's so many other elements that you're going to see. I actually incorporate some sci-fi into it at that point when it comes to weaponry and what the group of Dark Alphar are into, which I absolutely loved the way that worked out. But yeah, I mean, people just kind of don't understand. I wish people, before they judge something, would more go into it and do more research about it. Because like I said, publishing a book, you know, you don't just get to write whatever's in your head and be like, bam, there it is. Let's publish a book. No, they want specific things. And especially if you're dealing in the genre of fantasy, you know, you're locked into a world and creatures that basically have already been created. They're already there. They're, you know, fairies. If I say a fairy, you think of Tinkerbell or something of that nature. You know, if I say an elf, you think tall, beautiful, straight hair, pointy ears, you know, dragons, you know, scaled reptiles with wings. These things are already created. So you can only manipulate those things so much in order to, you know, take a different stance on it. So yeah, I did definitely do minute tweaks in there. And I think too, once you, the second book is released, you're going to be able to see a lot of more world building, because that is another question that I got a lot. They said some people liked the world building I used and some people were like, I want more. Well, you have to think about it from the first point perspective of Genevieve, is who I wrote it from. This whole entire book, she's been a slave. She doesn't have, you know, freedom to go roam around the lands and go take tours of all the other different, you know, courts and all the other different realms. She is a slave. She is stuck in the Light Court to do, you know, whatever Galen basically tells her. And so a lot of people are like, I want to see more of the world. Well, realistically, from a slave's point, you're not gonna be able to see it. Now in book two, when she gets a form of freedom, you're definitely gonna be able to see that world coming into fruition. And I did spread that out throughout the books because I didn't want to, I don't know. I don't like personally getting shoved in the face with a bunch of world building all at once. You know, I like a little slow release to where you're anticipating you get to learn little new nuggets as we go.
Okay. Wow. Is there any tentative release on when the second book will be out?
Yes. I don't want to say it too much because I know, but last time I was told it's around September. So hopefully, yeah, they wanted to do a 6 month, every 6 months as that goes. So that is tentative. That's not affirmed yet. I don't have an affirmed date because things are kind of shifting around, especially because I have two series going at the same time. So definitely wanting to, you know, I mean, they're back to back. So, you know, if I just had one in April, I'm going to have one in May. If I have one in September, my next book is in October. So yeah, as of right now, September is what they're telling me, and I can't give like anything else too much away, but fingers crossed, because that's my favorite book. I think that is going to get so much more readers involved in the series. It's really going to do the hook and sinker. So I'm excited.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it does sound very exciting. So this is what coming from the publisher, that they want every 6 months?
That is what they said thus far. So that might change. I know they're just trying to like get the books out there right now to kind of give a variety, because that is another like public, or what's it called? It's a different marketing strategy for an author. Like, you just don't want one book sitting out there, because in order to keep those readers engaged and those readers coming back, you want multiple books so they have something to trail off of you. So if they like your writing style, they're like, okay, I read this book, but she has this book as well. Let me go dig into that. And so you're having a lot more like movement, I guess, at that point.
So, and regarding the publisher, is there any strategy which you have to do to promote your book, or is it them who are doing the strategy themselves on how to promote it?
So very often in publishing, and this goes through for like the big publishing houses, like even Penguin Random House and Bloomsbury and whatnot, but new authors don't get a whole lot of support when it comes to marketing. That's kind of on you. My team has been great. They are a newer publishing house. And so I've gotten to work with one of the creators, myself, and they do have their own marketing team, which is fantastic. He's been allowing us to use resources from over there as well. But they do a lot more on the end of like online promotion, whether it be like running ads on Instagram and Facebook and things of that nature. They do use their resources and their connections as far as reaching out to local bookstores, you know, all the assistance that they already have put in place for, you know, Ingram to get that the books over there, but a lot of the marketing is myself. And so that's why I did create that street team. A lot of authors, especially indie authors and that nature, have street teams that kind of are people like you. I think I have like 25 people on my street team at this point. I'm actually going to open up to more here in a little bit, but yeah, they help you basically create content, movie reels, quotes, things of that nature, because Instagram and TikTok is where it's at right now for the book lovers person, book lovers platform. So I took to that, and that was an interesting road, let me tell you, because I like Facebook. You know, I post my family on Facebook and keep connected with old friends, but when I knew as soon as I signed, I was like, oh, I don't know really anything about Instagram. Like, how am I going to do this? And I didn't have a TikTok account. And so beginning of February, like, I created all of that, and I'm literally on my phone. It's so unhealthy how much I'm on my phone, but it's been great. Like, from then to now, I've gathered almost 8,000 followers on Instagram. I have a lot on TikTok. A couple of videos have 15,000 views, things of that nature. And it might be small compared to some, but, you know, as a person who's only been on social media for 3 months, that's been inevitable, and that's been great. So yeah, just making myself available to other people. I have like friends on Instagram that I don't know what they look like, but I talk to them daily about different things. So just making those connections, making yourself very available to others, and then also giving back. I know my street team, for example, the week before the launch of my book, Awakening the Dark Throne, we did our first street team challenge. And so they had it like every day there was requirements, what they had to post, what they had to create, how many times they had to post, what they had to go back and like. And if you abided by all those for the 7 days up to the release date, you got put into a drawing for a swag box. And so we just drew for that yesterday. And so those will be going out with, t-shirts, stickers, mugs, glass tumblers, a free book with a signed copy, bookmarks, things of that nature. So, that's also something that I definitely want to be doing, because again, this is all about the connections that I'm going to be making with my book. I love meeting people who, love Sarah J. Maas and being able to talk about her worlds that she's created. And I want the same type of environment and connection for my book and the book community.
So you were mentioning a little bit about
Sarah J. Maas.
Unfortunately, I've not been able to read for a long time. So doing other stuff, I just not had the time to read, because obviously you have to commit to reading and stuff and then get into the characters and stuff. Mm-hmm. I'm not, unfortunately, had that time to do that. But how do you get into writing? Were you always like someone who was an avid reader yourself?
Funny fact. My love, I guess, for fantasy and sci-fi started when I was young. My dad is a huge fantasy sci-fi nut. And so I grew up watching, like I said, Star Wars, Star Trek, all the superhero Marvel, characters. And this was before even all the movies started coming out. I remember watching like gargoyles and all these things. And then Lord of the Rings came about and I became obsessed. And then some of the first books I read was actually Anne Rice, which is hilarious because I should not have been reading that at like 11 years old. She's very, very much of a dark writer, but I fell in love with it. And so reading actually didn't come natural to me at first. I didn't like it. I rather have those movies, but I always had a really active imagination. Like, I remember when I was little and I would be in bed and I couldn't sleep, I would start playing, like, I would create my own movie reels in my head as me starring as the actor, the main actor, and using these elements, whether putting myself into a Star Wars, theme or whatnot. And then in fourth grade, my school was doing this book challenge, and it was, you read 50 books. And then in November, you got to go to Warrensburg College, where you would be able to meet a bunch of authors and get their book signed and things of that nature. It was a huge book fair. And I was like, I ain't doing that. I ain't working. Like, I'm not reading 50 books. There's no way. So then my mom and dad, and they were divorced at the time, but they went back to my parent-teacher conference, and my teacher was like, yeah, we have this great opportunity, but Jessica hasn't been, participating. And they're like, what? And I'm like, yeah, I don't want to read. I don't want to go. I don't care. And they're like, no, you're going to. So within a month, I read 50 books. So whether it be at my mom's house or my dad's house, they locked me in the room basically. And I just read the whole time. And, I thought I was going to hate it, but I ended up loving it. And at that point, I haven't stopped reading. I rather read than watch movies. Then my imagination just became more active and active. I remember my freshman year, I had my mythology course in my language arts class, and I became obsessed with mythology. I always kind of have loved those creatures and those things that aren't real. It's just like, it's a great way to escape, whether it be, I know for me, like things that I went through traumatically as a child, I used, my fantasy imagination to escape. And then I fell into the world of World of Warcraft and, League of Legends and all of those things, and Dungeons and Dragons, and kind of like exploring all of those different avenues that have built this platform that's still growing. I mean, we have so many more people now that are involved in fantasy and sci-fi than even 10 years ago because of all the Comic-Cons and the conventions and things of that nature. So, I really studied my craft in the beginning because I loved it. And then now I'm using all these things that I have accumulated over the past, 20 years of my life to put into my book.
Wow. So it's been a long journey for you doing this, and obviously something which, like you said, is something which you like to do. What is the second planned book you were saying is coming out?
Yes. So the first book, it's called Witches of Triora. That is a series. And the first book is called The Vessel. One isn't as much. This is, I would say, paranormal fantasy. I took a religious course, religious studies course in college. And I became kind of obsessed with it. So I have my own religion, Christianity, but I kind of became obsessed with other religions and how they all connected together. And so I always have been interested in like the lure of a witch and what that means and things of that nature. So this book is a 3-book series, and I'm hoping with a promise of a prequel, because I already have an idea for a prequel that I really want to kind of dabble with. But yeah, so this one's going to come from more of a modern standpoint. And I incorporate a lot of my culture into this book series. So this book series is very personal to me. I am from my culture is Italian. So my family, both sides are from Italy. Most of us are from Sicily, but this book takes place in Triora, Italy. And that city in specific has a lot of lore around witches, because back in 1587 to 1589, they had their own basic Salem's witch trial, where there are 3 main sources, which are wheat, wine, it was a nut of some sort. But they basically had a poor harvest and people were starving and dying and things of that nature. And so they wanted to blame somebody. They targeted a bunch of widows and healers that were women in the lower class. And they had their own Salem's witch trial at that point. And so they have their own, they have like nowadays, they have a witch festival they celebrate every July-ish timeframe and things of that nature. So the book takes place modern day in Triora, Italy. And we see the introduction of covens. I incorporated a lot of Wiccan religion into it as well. That's for the most part factual. Now, granted, I would like to preface, I am a fantasy writer, so I've taken elements that are real from religions or situations and I've modified them to fit the story. I also did a lot of study with Catholicism because that does play a lot into it as well. And so by book 2, you're actually going to see the incorporation of the 7 deadly sins, which I have created and restructured as the 7 princes of hell, which were the first, basically 7 angels that fell from hell when Lucifer fell. And so you're going to see a corporation of that. You're going to be able to visit, within this series, you're going to see the earthly realm. You're going to see hell. You're going to hear mentions of heaven. You're going to you're going to be able to visit purgatory. You're going to see a lot of relics that are realistic that the Catholic Church hold dear to them that are coming into fruition. You're going to, basically see all these different things that build up in this story at this point. So the first book is going to take you through the main character's eyes. Her name is Seren DeSalvo, and she was raised in a nunnery, and she believed, in the very beginning that she had polio, and the nuns at that point were taking care of her. She was an orphan. She was a found orphan, and they're taking care of her. And then right before she turns 21, the Abbey in Monte Cassino, Italy, is overtaken by basically hellhounds. And she's rescued by this dark, alluring character. And he brings her back to Triora, Italy, and Castle DeSalvo. And she finds her family and where she kind of come from. So she finds her aunt, Thora, her cousin, Francesca, and her nona, Lucia. And so she's learning at this point that she comes from a very long line of, witches. They're very powerful. They're very revered. She kind of comes into her own. And these witches, every 300 years, they worship the moon goddess. So if you guys know anything about like Wiccans and whatnot, they have the triple goddess, the maiden, the mother, and the crow. And so they worship her, Aridia. And every 300 years, Aridia picks a vessel that is chosen. There's 2 vessels, the horned god vessel and the moon god vessel. And they are basically bestowed their power to put in the earth and refeed it to the covens. And at this point, the covens believe that her cousin Francesca is the vessel, the moon vessel. And then there's another one named Orion, who he is the horned vessel. So she kind of goes through, she's learning about her culture. Then she has run-ins with, these demonic creatures. There's a dark coven called Obsidian. And they are basically defective witches that have defected, and they're, all about the blood rite magic and things of that nature. And they're also She learns that they are making like pacts with demons to have them use them as hosts, in order, you know, selling their soul in order for magic or power, things of that nature. And they're very demonic the way that I describe them. There's a couple of scenes in there, again, check your trigger warnings, that are pretty detailed because you're dealing with demons. You know, you're dealing with things that are naturally evil. So yeah, she's, you know, fighting these things. She's learning her powers and all these things. She's also falling in love and figuring all this stuff out before, because she's really never lived, you know, a normal life because she's been raised in an abbey. So yeah, you're gonna be on a there. This one is very meted out. There's so many turns. There's so many new characters. There's so many hidden tidbits I put, which are going to drive some people crazy, because some people want to know, like, it doesn't matter if it's in a book of a series. They want to know everything in that first book. They want it cleared up in that first book. This book is definitely not like that. There's like little serial bits or little serial trails that I added in this first book that you won't even make a connection to until book three. So it's going to be a fun reread when people go back and kind of reread it and they're like, oh, I see it now. But yeah, so it's definitely a fun one. And I love the personalities and the incorporation of religion that I put into this one.
Yeah, sounds very exciting now. I'm getting a bit intrigued, even though I've not read for, I don't know how long it's been. It's been years and years since I read the book. But even I'm intrigued in knowing more about this. Definitely. So do check it out. Awakening the Dark Throne is available now. Do check it out now on all the good places. Amazon is one of them. Barnes and Noble. And all the online good places, do check it out. And obviously, Jessica has her own YouTube channel as well, where she's posting stuff. So you can do check it out and do subscribe to her YouTube channel, as well as you can obviously give her feedback on, like you said, she's available on all the social good places as well. Yeah, absolutely. It's definitely been a pleasure. It's been nice to have you on. And I think it's probably the first time I've had someone on who's been able to describe me in such a nice detail, and been able to and someone who's a sci-fi author. So I think it's probably the first time that's happened as well, so it's been nice to have you on.
Thank you, and
wishing you lots of success for this book, and I'm sure it's already doing well, the book and the feedback you're getting. So I'm wishing you lots of success for this book and for the next one, and I'm sure we will be able to bring you back on for that one as well.
Sure.
On there, so first of all, thank you very much for coming on and giving us your time.
Thank you so much, Raj. I appreciate the opportunity to talk.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Hi, everyone. This is author Jessica Ann Deshaka. I am the author of Awakening the Dark Throne and the Witches of Tree Aura series. I just want to tell you guys, you should definitely go out today and check out the Women's Podcast to connect with different authors, to connect with different artists around the world, and to get some insight into the lives of different women who are changing the world. So definitely be able to check that out. Subscribe and check back in as well for updates and different things that are up and coming. Thanks and have a great day.